Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/canadaland to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Danielle Paradis, contributing editor here at Canada Land. Hello.
Hello, Jesse Brown.
Today on the show, with reporters covering the story thrown into jail, we had to rely on tweets from Leonardo DiCaprio to keep us up to date on Wet'suwet'en. Honestly, not the worst solution to the news desert problem. Also today, how much money would you spend to defend the reputation of a charity that no longer exists? If the answer is zero, then you're not a very good friend of We Charity, are you? Welcome back to Shortcuts, Danny, where we talk shit about the news.
Happy to be here.
This episode is brought to everybody by Andrew Stewart, Kayla Neville, Anthony Dirk, Tanya Perizzolo, Kevin Richardson, Ann Nix Dubhad, Darren Reich, and James.
Hi, I'm James, a real estate consultant in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. I support Canada Land because it's a steady stream of quality, independent journalism. Shows like White Saviors have a depth and detail that's tough to find in other Canadian podcasts, and I appreciate the diversity of topics and voices in programs like Commons and The Backbench.
Okay, so Danielle, of course, I just hit refresh on Leonardo DiCaprio's Twitter account most days. And that's how I learned. No, it's not how I learned, but I did see this tweet from Leo. After setting up a blockade to protect their land, community, and sacred headwaters, Wedzin Kwa from Coastal GasLink's planned fracked gas pipeline, the Wet'suwet'en Nation has faced militarized raids from the RCMP. He needs a little bit of copywriting help, but we must protect the rights of land defenders, tweets Leonardo DiCaprio about the conflict in Wet'suwet'en. That is information we got from Leo, but we did not get information for 3 nights and 4 days from two of the journalists who have been most present embedded in Wet'suwet'en, and that is photojournalist Amber Bracken, who is on assignment with the Narwhal, and documentary filmmaker Michael Toledano, because they were arrested by the RCMP last Friday while reporting. The cops broke into this little house where they were embedded with an axe and arrested these two journalists, and they knew they were journalists. The RCMP had been warned they were journalists, and as they were being arrested, well, here's what that sounded like.
I'm a member of the media. media. You've been notified that I'm here. I'm in
arrest right now, so step out.
Okay. I'm coming with you. I'm a member of the media. I'm filming a documentary for CBC Television. You are twisting my wrist. I'm a member of the media. I'm filming a documentary for CBC Television. I have press credentials. Okay, would you like to see my press credential?
So, Danny, I want to get into this with you because there's a lot of different aspects of this to unpack, but I think I got to disclose before we do that we're outraged by this, and Canada Land signed on to an open letter from the CAJ and dozens of other Canadian news organizations sent to Federal Minister of Public Safety, Marco Mendicino, demanding the immediate release of those two journalists. They were released. It's very unclear to me what apparently they're facing charges. And while they were locked up, of course, they were prevented from reporting. We haven't received any word back from Federal Minister Marco Mendicino, but BC's Minister of Public Safety, Mike Farnsworth, you know, asked about this. These journalists were taken off of the job. And he said, well, you know, they were released, weren't they? The direct quote is, "The process worked appropriately." He said it's not for politicians to interfere with the courts. This all played out, quote, as it should be.
Ugh.
What do you think?
I mean, this story, that there's a lot going on in there. And so, of course, I think one of the things that I'm starting to see some pushback on would be journalists centering themselves in the story, or that's been the criticism that's emerging. But I think when you hear comments like that, it really illuminates the problem. It's not a system's not working. Well, this isn't the system that we want. Now, is the RCMP arresting journalists in order to prevent information coming out about oppression of the Wet'suwet'en people and land defenders as they try to advocate on their land? Well, I guess you could argue that system is working the way it was built.
You know, Desmond Cole was among the voices saying that he's uneasy with these press freedom narratives. And, you know, I know what he means because, you know, Wet'suwet'en does not get front page coverage. It's an ongoing story. It blew up in the press for a while. But the protests themselves, the RCMP response, that doesn't get front page coverage. But Michael and Amber's arrest was on it was the big front page of the Toronto Star. It got big coverage everywhere. But Desmond tweets, "I fear we're doing harm by elevating the right to watch someone else have their freedom taken away." And I get the concern that, the press is just protecting their own. Of course, the press, I would be first to criticize the press if we ignored Michael and Amber. We do need to show solidarity. But I could see, like, well, why are their rights more important than the activists who are also arrested? Here's the problem with that for me, Danny, is even if we were to say all these rights are equal, or even if we were to go further and say that the rights of the Wet'suwet'en protesters are more important on lands that are arguably sovereign to them, they're more important than these press freedom rights. How the hell do you know those rights are trampled if the journalists covering it are in jail? Like, you kind of have to prioritize the right to see what the fuck is going on, or we can't even engage with the other rights being trampled.
Yeah, I mean, this critique is perhaps premature. If this was on, you know, both of the journalists were still in jail at the time that Desmond tweeted this. So I think, you know, if this is still a story a week later, then yes, it'd be fair to say that we're all centering ourselves. And I also appreciate that it can really look to activists, especially, that there is an unfair advantage that journalists have. Of course, they have a bigger platform. They are well connected in media. So when you have, like, when you have Amber Bracken, who's very well known in Canada, in jail, you have every journalist who pays attention to these things is making comments. So they're online, they're tweeting, they're sharing articles, and they're advocating for Amber's release and for Michael's release. But that is also a relatively new solidarity among the press. Like, you covered a story in 2016, and there was an injunction, and I forget the name of the journalist who was arrested at that time, but I recall that you covered this story.
The Justin Brake story?
Justin Brake, yes. And at that time, nobody really paid attention.
Yeah.
It was like, well, you know, he broke the law, so too bad for him. That's what happens. This is a vastly different response. And I think that this is because of growing awareness about RCMP tactics and trying to shut down the freedom of the press, which also shuts down the protesters' rights and the public's right to know what's going on.
I think you make a great point. Justin Brake was reporting for the Newfoundland Independent. And I think journalists looked at this like, well, we don't know what that is. And we also aren't like, you know, he's using all this language like land defenders. He sounds like an activist. He's not one of us. And I think that initially it was ignored. And, you know, I go to these galas where we all stand there and journalists, we, you know, how many journalists were killed in Mexico this year? And let's all, we've flown in this oppressed journalist from halfway across the world. Let's all honor them and give them an award. And we always are doing that while we're much more reticent to actually point out when this happens here in Canada. Now, eventually, after Justin Brake won his court case and was vindicated, he was honored at one of those galas as well. But I don't think we can say enough in terms of solidarity for Michael and Amber. And I think that there's a lot to unpack here in what is shifting. It's by no accident that we're getting to be a little bit more supportive, but not supportive enough necessarily. So let me go through a few things here. As you heard in that video, as the RCMP are arresting Michael Toledano, he identifies himself as a reporter with the CBC. But then when you read the CBC's reporting on Michael and Amber's arrest, they identify Michael as an independent filmmaker. So what's going on? Which is it? Is Michael lying? Is he not there for the CBC? No, he's there for the CBC. And this is something that no CBC viewer would ever have any chance of knowing. But when you watch a documentary, unlike The Passionate Eye, various different documentaries that CBC plays, that is a documentary that the CBC absolutely commissioned, but it's produced by a third-party production company. And therefore, when that reporter gets in trouble, the CBC washes their hands. They don't claim him. He's not a CBC reporter. And, you know, the CBC benefits greatly from these types of deals because it's not like they're going to take one of their staff reporters and embed them in Wet'suwet'en for, like, weeks and months. But, you know, a documentary production company, you might find somebody who's willing to do that, and they're quite happy to air that, and it's got to meet the same journalistic standards. And to the world, it is CBC journalism. But when it comes to the liability, does he have the backing of the CBC in his role there as a reporter? No, he doesn't. And Danny, the CBC was not one of the news organizations that signed the open letter demanding Michael and Amber's immediate release. Post Media signed that open letter, but the CBC, for whom he was there reporting, did not sign. Let's hear from like Michael himself. Here's what he had to say about his arrest. Because I know there are people out there in the public who look at Michael and Amber askance and are like, are they protest? They were embedded. That's what the RCMP said. Well, we arrested them because they were embedded. Like that somehow means they're like, they themselves are protesters. But it is true that Michael and Amber don't talk like CP reporters talk. They seem more sympathetic to the Wet'suwet'en cause than a traditional reporter would. But they're not weirdo fringe reporters doing activist journalism. Amber's stuff is in the Globe and Mail. So yes, there's solidarity. But at the same time, and I think probably what's happening here is the mainstream press does not have staff. They do not have reporters who are able to stay on a story for weeks or months. And so they rely on people like Amber and Michael who are making those commitments. And those people don't have the same institutional fear to say like, yes, I'm giving you good, honest coverage, but I'm not going to claim objectivity here. Right?
Yeah, they also don't have the same benefits and the job security that the CBC staffers would have.
You know, Amber was there for the Narwhal and they claim her, but I know that her stuff is also published widely by others and she assumes all the risk and then they use the content on the other side. Meanwhile, in the eyes of the RCMP, here's how Michael puts it. 4 days ago, I was arrested at gunpoint for filming RCMP tactical teams as they pointed guns to remove Wet'suwet'en people from their lands. My arrest and incarceration were punitive and a blatant attempt to repress images of police violence against Indigenous people in Canada. I have no doubt in my mind that my arrest was targeted. One officer who I have encountered many times on Wet'suwet'en territory gloated about the arrest. When my handcuffs broke and had to be hacksawed off, one officer said he would keep them as a souvenir. We also learned from the Narwhal that Amber Bracken is being investigated. She's in an active investigations database from the RCMP. So they are targeting these journalists in a way that they never targeted a Globe and Mail reporter, a CBC reporter, a CP wire service reporter, because in the eyes of the RCMP, they're no different than the protesters. And the RCMP say, oh, you're embedded, and that puts you in a different category. The courts are very clear and have been very clear with the RCMP. There is no such distinction. These are reporters. Stay the fuck away from them. Don't arrest them. Let them do their jobs. The RCMP don't seem to care what the courts say.
Yeah, I think we also have to keep in mind, of course, this time it was Amber and Michael who were arrested. But increasingly, as awareness of the importance of diversity and Indigenous people telling stories, you know, we will have newsrooms or freelance, and we do actually have freelance Indigenous people who are there, who are going to face the same sorts of arrest, but they're also going to have that additional oppression of being somebody who's perhaps racialized, who the police can identify. And then how do you think that they're going to be treated?
You've got it exactly. And it's going to get only more cloudy and the power is going to shift more into the cops' hands, because the actual first person on the scene documentary evidence of this stuff is going to come from actual involved parties and has been, you know. Mm-hmm. It's great that Amber and Michael were there covering it, but in the absence of reporters and journalists, protesters are making their own media, and often, like, yeah, it's coming from an interested party, but it's videotape of police brutality. So the line that has traditionally existed that allows reporters to have some safe space to look at these things is being destroyed. And this is not merely an issue on the fringe, because it's not as if this is like happening and there's mainstream press presence there. We are relying on protesters and freelancers to tell us what the hell is happening in our own country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the shrinking of journalism, with not having people on these beats, you're seeing increasingly small organizations. And that's where the Canadian Association of Journalists and the Narwhal, you know, they went to court with other media organizations to make sure that they had the right to report. And this isn't going to get any better anytime soon. There's going to be more reliance on independent media. Independent media is paying attention to these stories more than mainstream media. It's a focus, right, as we talk about Indigenous issues and climate change.
David Suzuki says, if political leaders keep ignoring what's happening as BC is underwater, as people are dying, and we're seeing, like, they just carry on and don't act on climate change and continue building pipelines, David Suzuki is quoted as saying, pipelines will be blown up. Wow. Aaron O'Toole, very angry about that. Jason Kenney, very angry about that. How dare David Suzuki say that pipelines will be blown up? The David Suzuki Foundation has distanced themselves and disavowed David Suzuki for saying pipelines will be blown up. Danny, would any of these people who are feigning outrage at David Suzuki be the tiniest bit surprised if somebody blew up a pipeline? It's completely consistent with Aaron O'Toole and Jason Kenney's narrative about these lunatic environmentalists. And on the other side, people like David Suzuki, who are not advocating blowing up pipelines, are saying, it's just a true thing to say. Like, they will be blown up. I'll say it.
What times we're alive in. I did see an interesting Twitter Spaces last night through the Canadian Association of Journalists. So the backbench's own Fatma was there, but in her role at the CAJ, and Brent Jolly, they were having this really interesting discussion about what to do as journalists. Like, where should the focus be? What should the story be on? And of course, they got into some great conversations on the hesitancy, as we've talked about, to cover journalists, to make journalists the story, but also the need to. There was a really interesting comment by somebody there from the Canadian Federation of Women Journalists talking about the need to have more training for the RCMP. And I think we have to move beyond the idea that we can, as journalists, work with the RCMP when they're acting like they're acting right now. They know what they're doing. They're not accidentally arresting journalists. There's a reason that they're targeting journalists. And there's a reason that they crack down particularly hard when the protest has to do with Indigenous issues and land sovereignty, right? Like, I was looking up some of the last large civil disobedience cases in Canada, and they're almost all about Indigenous land sovereignty.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter, like, seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships, is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. Danielle, what do you have to duly note today?
I would like to duly note a story that was really large in Alberta, but with everything else in the world that's going on right now, of course, COVID, the issues at Wet'suwet'en, and just, you know, everything. There was a discussion, I don't know if you recall this one, about NDP MLA Shannon Phillips and a CBC journalist, Megan Grant, who exposed some misconduct within the force. And an investigation showed that Phillips was monitored by the police inappropriately after she made some comments. So in Lethbridge, the NDP MLA Shannon Phillips was followed by police officers. They took secret photos of her as she was meeting with constituents in a diner in 2017. There was a Freedom of Information request when she became aware that the police were following her. And it revealed that people who work for the service used a police database 8 times to search for her name with no investigative purpose. So that's obviously a really big problem, right? A political figure being monitored by the police. Mm-hmm. And when this first came out, there was a lot of outrage, and there was promises from the Justice Minister, Casey Madu, about dealing with the Lethbridge police officers in an appropriate way, making sure that they don't abuse their power. But on the 22nd, November 22nd, the headline in CBC reads, Lethbridge Police Commission nixes call for inquiry into alleged threats against MLA and CBC reporter. So after this surveillance, there were Facebook groups where there were inappropriate comments and threats against both the reporter who reported the story from Shannon Phillips and Shannon Phillips herself. So it's sort of another politically driven action just kind of swept under the rug because it's police officers.
Duly noted. I'd like to duly note that you cannot give birth in Yellowknife.
Yeah.
Shout out to a listener, Eric McNair Landry, who told us about this. Here's what Eric tells us. Our local Northwest Territory Yellowknife Hospital recently put out a press release stating that due to nursing shortages, they will be closing the labor and delivery ward and flying all expecting mothers to Edmonton, which is 1,700 kilometers away from Yellowknife, from December 10th to February 21st. This is estimated to affect 160 mothers. They will need to isolate for 2 weeks when they return to Yellowknife. And Eric asks, can you imagine missing the holidays, being away from family and friends, miles from home, when you are delivering your child? And our producer Tiffany asks, like, how about having to get on a damn plane while you're in fucking labor? So that's the situation in Yellowknife. And you gotta wonder, Danny, if this shortage of medical staff has anything to do with the pandemic.
Well, I think another part of that story is that the women actually have to be vaccinated in order to fly, or at least the as of October 30th, anyone wanting to fly needed to be fully vaccinated. So now you have a transition period till November 30th that allows people to have proof of a negative COVID-19 test. But I would say for pregnant women, there was a lot of changing information during the pandemic about whether or not it was safe to be vaccinated because we don't do medical trials on pregnant women. So it was sort of like, oh, I don't know, on your own, maybe take the vaccine, see what happens. We now know, of course, that it is safe for pregnant women. But you could find somebody who got stuck in this situation where there was confusing information. Also, I just can't even imagine like having to fly to Edmonton, being 9 months pregnant. I thought you weren't even supposed to be on a plane when you were that pregnant. Duly noted.
Our investigation has revealed far more schools were funded than were actually built, leading to an inevitable question from the executive director of Charity Watch.
The logical question is, where's the money?
Danny, did you see the CBC's documentary, their new one on We Charity?
I did, The Fifth Estate. Just watched it last night.
You know who didn't see it? Lululemon founder Chip Wilson, former Prime Minister Kim Campbell, football legend Pinball Clemens. They did not see it, at least, when they began demanding that the CBC kill it. They did not know what was in it, and yet they, through this group that they're members of, these are all high-profile We Charity donors who launched this campaign under the umbrella. This is not We Charity doing this. It's Friends of We Charity. We're the Friends of We Charity. We Charity supposedly is closed. And the Friends of We Charity were working to kill this documentary before the documentary aired. And I noticed, Danielle, that this Friends of We Charity group was paying to promote a very slick promotional video against the CBC's documentary the day before the documentary aired.
I totally believed in our CBC as being factual, providing the true facts and balance in reporting. And I hated that term fake news, but I now am questioning what I'm seeing on CBC because I'm wondering whether it's skewed to some kind of agenda that was predetermined.
All of us have been more than thrilled for not just the partnership and the access to doing good, but the results. The transparent, clean, obvious results of impact.
This is the shining star of what philanthropic work overseas is all about. So when the media in Canada starts to jump on this and turn it into a political issue, this just, I couldn't sit any longer. And this is why we are here today.
And it was all of these like We Charity donors who were sure that this documentary that they had not seen was a bad documentary.
Yeah, it really ties in well to the documentary itself when they're all of a sudden getting formal letters at the CBC head office that the Fifth Estate journalists had broken the law and illegally trespassed and were getting calls from the governor of the region. And, you know, we got to find people who love us as much as the richest people in Canada love We Charity.
I wish I had people who love me that much, who can travel into the future and watch a documentary about me and then go back in time to block it from being released. And for them to do that independently without me asking them to or coordinating those efforts.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. Brody Fenlon, in his CBC editor's blog article, very rare thing, CBC News' editor-in-chief Brody Fenlon like wrote a blog post. They rarely get into the behind-the-scenes stuff, but they did this time, because it was so unusual. And he said that they received more than 30 letters of complaint with multiple signatures from We Charity donors who expressed concerns about our journalism. They questioned the integrity of the Fifth Estate's reporters, and they urged the CBC not to publish the story or bring it to air. And they seemed to know that this journalism was bad before they'd seen it. And it was this pressure campaign, went to the highest levels. The president of the CBC, Catherine Tait, she's from the world of film and TV production. She got it from a bigwig film and TV producer. You know, they were really like strategizing, how can we get to the CBC and convince them not to air this? He writes that one of the complaints that he got from a We Charity donor, accidentally, the guy left in the email, at the bottom of the email is a correspondence with Craig Kilberger, where he's like, he's sending the email to Craig before he sends it to the CBC saying, does this look good to you, buddy? This is, do I even have to say this? This is a coordinated campaign, and it's something that Canada Land is very familiar with, that if you do journalism on We Charity, many people will come criticize you, and now they're threatening to sue the CBC And it's interesting to see this happen to somebody else, frankly.
And I believe you got, even for sharing that article, you got an email as well, threatening you for spreading false information.
Well, that was really interesting. As soon as I just retweeted a piece of CBC reporting saying like, okay, the CBC has found that they misrepresented like the basics, like the biggest thing that we has supposedly been doing over the decades is like, you give us money, we build schools, and this is how many schools we build. And CBC has went and proven, no, you didn't. And so when I just like retweeted that, I get like immediately retract that statement. What do you think is going on there? Why would We Charity threaten to sue me for CBC's journalism?
Well, they hate you. I think that's probably it. I mean, there's probably some poor soul whose whole job it is to watch like all of Jesse Brown's tweets to see if he mentions We Charity. And so, you know, whoever you are, I feel for you.
I feel for that person too, if they exist. But I won't say that they hate me. I have no reason to believe that they hate me. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I do notice that for the past 2 years, they have this Twitter account called We Communications. They didn't want to be like fighting with journalists from their like main feel good, you know, Twitter account. So they created this like, this is our communications account where we're going to actually contest all this journalism. And they've used that account to go against Charlie Angus, member of parliament. They've used that account to go against the CBC, Bloomberg News. All of these news organizations that are not Canada Land independently went and did their own investigations of We Charity and found big problems. But the pinned tweet for the last 2 years, if you go to that Twitter account, We Communications, the first thing you see is Jesse Brown has lied in his recent report. Now, maybe it's because they don't like me, but I would suggest to you that if you had to choose from a crisis communications point of view who you'd rather be in a fight with, you know, if you're saying Jesse Brown is a reporter with a vendetta who's out to get us, maybe people would believe that. But if you say Bloomberg News, the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, and the CBC are all conspiring, they're all colluding because they have it in for us, you sound a little bit paranoid. I would rather be fighting with Jesse Brown than with all of those news organizations, you know?
Yeah, he's not a very sympathetic character.
I'm just happy, Danny, if we can turn our attention to the actual story, which is that, like, what the CBC did here and accomplished. You know, this is where the white saviors ended. Our report ended with saying the bottom line, all of this scandal with We Charity and all the celebrities and the political lobby, all the stuff that people have lost track of, what is the bottom line? Well, either they built the schools or they didn't. If I had the CBC's budget, I would send a crew to Kenya to go and count the schools and the villages. And the CBC did that work. And they found that most of the schools promised aren't there. They don't exist. Tip of the hat to the CBC. Like, that doesn't raise questions. That provides answers.
No, of course, We Charity's response would be that the funds were not strictly for schools. And that seems to be a big matter of contention as to whether or not we're talking about the physical school building or the funding around the schools. But it does seem obvious, at least the donors who spoke to CBC for the documentary or the clips that were used when they were testifying, that, of course, there's a lot of questions out there. What I found really fascinating was when you watch the documentary, The Fifth Estate versus like reading, you get to see all of the time that they went through, digging through the documents, trying to identify donors. And those friends of We Charity who reached out and expressed concern were also asked to provide information on what they were promised as donors and how that lined up, which, you know, is a really good question and could provide the balance that they say that they're not seeing, but they didn't provide that. None of the friends of We Charity, at least according to CBC, seem to have provided the documents that they were requested.
But it's not like we don't have that information. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of documentation of We Charity making specific promises. And what the woman from Charity Watch says in that documentary is, so where did the money really go? And that's where this story is at now. And I know that people are like, oh my God, let this end. Once we know that, we're at the end of this story. And, you know, We Charity says all the money went to Kenya. And I say, all right, prove it. Because in the past, you have just absolutely said things that aren't true to the media.
Yeah, we'll probably never know that.
There is a way that you could know if an organization spends over two decades raising money from everyone from grieving parents to like school kids, who are raising money from bake sales to big corporations and wealthy philanthropists, and they spend two decades raising money. And then we have very good reason. We know for a fact the money wasn't spent on what it was supposed to be spent on. And we ask the question, where is that money? Who has the power to find out?
The donors.
Law enforcement.
Oh, I suppose. Those people.
Cops. Cops and auditors. Because I don't know what more journalists can do. All right, that's Shortcuts for today. Danielle Paradis, thank you for joining me for it.
Yes, happy to be here.
We're on Twitter at CanadaLand. Listen, quick message to listeners out there. If you are a journalist who's going to be working this Christmas, if you're going to be in the newsroom, or if you have been, reach out to us. Every year we like to hear stories about Christmas in the newsroom, about holidays in the newsroom. Please send them to us, audio or just an email at editor@CanadaLand.com. You can email me about this episode at jesse@CanadaLand.com. I read everything you send. Danielle, where can people find you?
You can also email me, danielle@CanadaLand.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Danny Parody.
This episode is produced by Tiffany Lamb, with additional production by Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Kieran Oudshorn. Theme music is by So-Called, syndication by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do and you want to receive ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, please support us by hitting the link in the show notes or go to canadaland.com/join.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.